So I apologize to you, Dave. I was working late tonight, working at the office, and I was like, I gotta hurry, I gotta get over here to record. There's a recording tonight. And last week I showed you like a bunch of these whiskeys that I had bought.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so excited about all these. And I realized on my way over, I was like, I bet he thinks that I'm home, like a normal person who, you know, goes home at a normal time after work, and we'll be bringing over a whiskey. And I was like, no, that's not the case for me. And so I was stopping to get a quick bite to eat because I hadn't eaten even dinner yet. And so I stopped at this Bill and Ruth sandwich store, and I was like, man, I probably should try to get something because Dave's not going to have anything. And I looked right over next to this Bill and Ruth's, and I was like, oh, a liquor store. Look at that. I didn't even know that one was there. Sweet. Providential. I walk into this liquor store, and I don't know what kind of front this liquor store is, but I walk in, and there's like six bottles of like very well whiskey, liquors. And there's like one
like cheap whiskey.
Yeah. And one little refrigerator that had Monster energy drinks in it, and one little refrigerator that had like a couple six packs in it. And he's like, can I help you? Is there something I can help you find? And I'm like, in my mind, thinking like, no, I just want to kind of get the heck out of here. I don't really want to buy anything.
I thought you guys were a real, yeah. A real liquor store.
Right. No wonder I haven't heard of this one. Anyway, the only thing that I could find was this beer, Victoria beer. It's a Mexican beer. And so I grabbed a six pack and got the heck out of there.
It's funny because when you told me that right when you got here, I said, I know exactly what liquor store you're talking about. And I also have the feeling that the liquor store part of the business is not the main part of whatever the business is that they're doing.
Right.
So
anyway, I didn't come with a very exciting
and
drink.
It's been there for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I went in there like 6 or 7
business
years ago.
Business is good.
And it was exactly the same. It's like, oh.
I thought it was hilarious. He asked me like, is there something I can help you look for? And it's like, yeah, I was looking for liquor and beer. I thought that's what
it's like. Literally, there's like this small rack of wine.
Yeah.
And a little mini fridge. Like a big mini fridge with beer in it.
Yeah.
And a couple liquors, and it's like, what?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Anyway, so I didn't come with anything impressive today to sip on, but here we are.
Here we are. Here we go. And yet, here we are.
And yet, we're still trucking along.
Yeah.
So
what's new?
Well, I'm still building my pig pen. I think I talked maybe about that a little bit last week, but figured out how I was going to do that, which was edifying. It consumed way too much of my mental thought process throughout the weekend. I just sat there and stared at it for a long time.
Yeah. Until it comes to you, and then eventually it does.
Right. Because the reason why is like each wall I have to be able to remove so that way I can get my tractor in there to till the soil up. Right. And so I was trying to figure out like, okay, how do I make these removable yet still firm? Because there's going to be pigs in it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So I worked on that a lot. My boys have been painting our fence, which has been going well.
Pipe fence.
Yeah. My pipe fence.
Hard to paint.
Very hard to paint. One goes with a hot, heavy grit sandpaper and knocks things down. The other one follows wiping it down and then painting it. So that's been going well. They're maybe 20% done. So
sweet.
That's pretty good. School is about to start next week, so that'll kind of get us back into a rhythm. I'm really looking forward to order again. I feel like the summertime, you know, sometimes just rules are just like thrown out the window, and it's 9:15. You're like, why are my kids still up? I'm coming home late. There's just not the same. We're sleeping in.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm ready for that order.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Well, so that's not really a thing. It's not like during the summer, because we homeschool, nothing major changes other than that we're just not doing school. So there's just, it's not as big of a transition, mm-hmm. you know? But I don't really have any big stories this week. I'm just still working on all the things I'm still working on. And, you know, if I'm going to be honest, as I look back over the last 7 days, I got very little done. Can I say I really got anything done? It's like, well, some things.
Yeah, I'm the one thing that I've been trying to get back into the habit of that I fell out of for some stupid reason on my part is just getting back into reading. You know, I was reading every day, and then I kind of went to every other day. Again, this is the whole purpose, or you know, the whole thing about the summertime for me is like your prayer life kind of starts slipping a little bit. It goes from like 30, you know, an hour to 30 minutes, from 30 minutes to 25 minutes, from 25 minutes to 22 minutes, and like it just kind of like trickles down.
Yeah.
And you're like, why is this happening? And then like my reading schedule, my intellectual life is you know, stumbling around.
I have felt like you were dumber lately.
Well, you haven't even been in my head. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't even know what's really going on up there. You'd be like, you'd be shocked at how dumb I am.
I can't tell. Is this a joke or are we really doing this?
So, yeah, I like, you know, St. Michael's Lent starts on Friday.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
I'm really excited about that because I just feel like I need a reset. I need a, all right, get your tail back in order.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about the summertime when you receive all these like blessings. There's tons of blessings, it seems like, in the summertime because you're very busy, but you have the opportunity to hang out with your kids, you know, play outside longer. The sun's not setting, you know, it's lighter for longer periods of time, so you can play with them outside a lot more, especially as a dad, because you know, you're going to office, you come home, it's 5:30 at best, you know, and then you have to eat and get the kids, you know, you have like an hour before you have to start getting them ready for bed. But when it's summertime and the sun's still out, you know, you can kind of push it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it's been really nice. But sometimes I feel like that these gifts that the Lord gives us throughout the summertime, it's very easy to fall attached to those gifts.
Mm.
And what ends up happening is, at least for me, is I start falling in love with the gifts and not the giver. Meaning, like, I'm just so grateful for, you know, I just intellectually, I know that it comes from our Lord, but I'm just like clam onto these, you know, oh, I just got to go out there and be with my kids for a little bit longer. Or, oh, I got to go, you know, do this project at the house. Or, you know, I got to help my wife with whatever it is. Or, or take on this at work. It's such a gift. It's, you know, it's a good thing to have these vocations and to live those out. And sometimes I feel like I grasp onto the gifts and focus on those without focusing on the giver.
Yeah, I feel that way, especially about vacation. I think it's so easy to go on vacation and then, you know, you don't mean to do this, but you find that, oh, I haven't even prayed. Like, you know, my prayer life is off. You know how it's just easy because you're in a different place. Your routines aren't there, that it's like, I just forgot to pray for like the last 2 days or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
And a lot of people, I think, and I can see why you would do this, because it's like, yeah, you know, like cut yourself some slack and like, yeah, okay, I'm not going to worry about praying a rosary while I'm on vacation, or, you know, stuff like that. And I just think it's important to remember, whether it's the summertime or if it's just vacation, we're going on, not on a vacation from God.
Right.
Right. But that is, we really, if we're going to do a vacation in a holy way, that you know, maybe some things will be different. That's okay. But you have to maintain the essentials of a relationship with him. Otherwise, your vacation will not be as good. Bottom line.
Especially in the long, long term.
Yeah.
Short term, if you're just looking at the gifts of the world, could be great.
Yeah.
But that's not, we play the long game as in the Christian life.
But then when you come back from vacation, or like what you're saying, when the summer's over, it's so easy not to get back into those old habits.
Right.
You know, if you let yourself slip out of them, mm-hmm. what you said, oh, it's just for a week. You know, whatever. Just even for like, oh, it's just for 4 days, long weekend.
Right.
Then you come back and it's like, oh, well, I'm still unpacking.
It's like, well, that suitcase has been there for 3 months.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm still unpacking.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you a guy who unpacks immediately right after vacations?
I do sometimes, and sometimes I let it sit there for a week.
Okay.
So I am known to be both. It just really depends.
I am not known for immediately unpacking. That's not something that I'm known. It will not be on my tombstone. This man unpacks his clothes after vacation.
Do you put them in the drawer when you go somewhere?
No. Because I have better things to do.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We have no idea where Jim is. But we're here. We're drinking some Victoria Cerveza Modelo from Mexico. Because this is what they had at the janky liquor store that Adam went to.
Mm-hmm.
The suspiciously low volume liquor store. It's a weird place.
Very weird.
On kind of a busy intersection. You'd think like...
I'm not saying for the police to go check it out off the BA and I 145th. I'm not saying to do that by the Bill and Ruth's.
I have no evidence or proof.
But if you're around...
Just seems weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they could possibly... I mean, they have to sell everything in the store.
Every month.
Or like even more than that.
Right.
Just to pay the rent and the guy who's working there. It's weird. It's bizarre.
Interesting business model.
Yeah. But you know what? That. Like I said, they've been there a long time. So obviously it's working or something.
Yeah. Or something.
Or something. Anyway.
Yeah. So last week we talked about prudence. We talked about memory, importance of memory and with prudence. And I was thinking about our conversation last week and like what to talk about this week. And I kind of came into this idea of like, you know, we've talked about purifying the memory before, which is good. Like, it's something that I think is such a healing process for men, especially men who have had trauma in their lives or have struggled with past sins that they're ashamed of or that they are trying to live a good holy life and they feel like they have this burden they still carry from a past life. the grace of purifying the memory and kind of the reconciliation of the senses, so to speak. To borrow a line from Bishop Eric Varden. And I came across this couple chapters in this book, The Narrow Way, a brief, clear, systematical exposition of the spiritual life for the laity, by Peter Gierman, who is a redemptionist back in the early 1900s.
Let me guess, this is a Koryesu book.
It is a Koryesu
Press
book. Yes, it is. And I came across this book. It's very clear. It's very orderly mannered of a book of the spiritual life. I mean, just kind of like, the subtitle is perfect. The Brief, Clear, Systematical Exposition of the Spiritual Life for the Laity. And I was like kind of thumbing through it, looking through a few things. It's really fun to read because it doesn't take you long to read a good section of it, and it's jam packed. Each little chapter, which is maybe a couple pages, has at most has a list of things to be aware of in the spiritual life, which I can really appreciate. It's kind of like a manual, so to speak, or kind of a blueprint of like, hey, by the way, if you're talking about this, here are the three things that you should be worried about or concerned about, or these are the three things you should stay away from, or here's how you heal this process in four simple steps.
Real punchy.
Right. And one of the chapters that was back-to-back, in discussion of prudence was talking about purifying the memory. And right before that, it was the title of Restraining the Instinct was right before that. And I was like, oh, okay. Color me intrigued. Like, what is this about? And then as I was reading it, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Right before purifying the memory, when you're talking about like carnal passionate pleasures, and restraining the instinct, so to speak, and then purifying the memory. So I thought like, okay, well tonight we should like, this would be a good piggyback off of our last conversation to kind of go more in depth into the memory aspect and really talk about some of the issues that we have in today's world and what we should do to control that, the sexual instinct.
Okay, yeah.
Because I've also seen, like, I don't know if you, I'm sure you have not, but there's been a lot of talk in the Catholic world about sex and men and sexualizing priests and things like that on several podcasts, especially named, Father Mike Schmitz.
I was going to say, thanks, Father Mike Schmitz. Yeah, why do you have to be so handsome? I mean, I feel very comfortable, like, blaming him.
So I thought, like, okay, there was an interview with Lila Rose and somebody else, I don't even remember who, and there was an off-colored or off-handed remark about, I shouldn't even talk about it because I don't know all the details. I didn't watch, or I watched it, but it was a while back ago. And anyway, this idea that men don't, do men actually need sex? Is it actually a good thing? Should we be sexualizing good-looking people? And the role of Catholic influencers, in this realm. And so it just kind of hit me as with that in the kind of back, in the back of my mind that's been happening in kind of the weird Catholic Twitter world or whatever, talking about restraining the instinct. So here's a quote that he has that's very punchy that I think I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it.
Okay.
For hearing it for the first time. He says, "The baser the passion it arouses, the more violent also is its impulse."
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's interesting. Your sexual desire or your sexual identity, your sexuality, let me just put it that way, it's almost like one of the nuclear, it's like one of the jet propulsion engines of your person. Which is why when we get that wrong, when we have people who are confused about, am I a man or a woman? how ought I express my sexuality? What does virtue look like for, you know? And when you get that wrong, that's why you see things go so cataclysmically wrong with a person.
Yeah, because if the foundations are wrong, it snowballs very quickly.
Yeah, I mean it's like right there with the desire to eat and drink,
mm-hmm.
right? That we also have this desire on one hand just to procreate,
right?
But and this is a good thing that God has given us.
It is not good for man to be alone.
It's not good, and the very first commandment is be fruitful and multiply. In the book of Genesis. So this is something that, you know, God wants us to have a very full, expressive sexuality, but it needs to be full and expressive in the right way that is ordered towards the divine, ordered towards charity and in a moral, according to the moral code in the natural law.
So what are your thoughts on it? So the baser the passion it arouses, like the more simple of the passion that is aroused, the more violent also is its impulse.
Well, I think because the lower or the baser the passion, the less it has to do with reason. And therefore, it's just all passion. It's just all feeling and emotion. And there's no thought behind it. It's just this urge,
and right. We talked about last week how prudence
it gets
is,
power, you know, strong that way.
It is more of the intellect, right? Ordered in towards the intellect, and the lower passions are more animalistic, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and this is like one of the ways we need to train ourselves. And I don't know, I might be jumping the gun here a little bit, but when you're having these moments of passion, and we need to train our children to do the same thing. One of the things we need to do is engage our rational brain. Okay, because you have this passion, the passionate side of your brain starts taking over. And what I mean by that is like teaching your kids to, when you have the pornography talk with them, tell them, when you see pornography, like if you ever see pictures of a woman, you know, of parts where her bathing suit covers, you know, stuff like however you want to say it, to teach them to say out loud, that's pornography. Because on the one hand, A, you're naming it and saying it out loud, and it's forcing you to engage your rational brain in that moment instead of just like being, you know, swept away in this, these feelings and passions that, you know, maybe they've probably never experienced before. But the same is true for us, that, you know, when you're in the throes of temptations, the more you can engage your rational brain, which is hard to do, and is not going to just solve your problem, but it is, okay, but, the temptation is not just going to go away because it's like, oh, well, let me become Greek and think about this.
Right.
You know, what would Aristotle say?
Right.
Like, well, who cares? In that moment, you're like, who cares what Aristotle says?
Yeah.
But it does help. And it helps you remember. It's like, oh, yeah, to think about things. And then once you start thinking clearly or, you know, rationally, it's like, oh, I should probably pray about this. And, you know, you just start making better decisions and you start putting yourself down a path that has better outcomes in a, you know, in a much better direction.
I think that's true, yeah. I just find it interesting that the more violent is his impulses, meaning, you know, they just attack. But yet, once you subdue those, once you, you know, have that virtue of engaging the intellect at that time, those passions actually become less and less and less. Those attacks.
Yeah. Over time.
Over time. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back. Restraining the instinct. That's what we're talking about this evening. The quote that we were talking about before the break, the base of the passion it arouses, the more violent also is its impulses. But I, you know, the spiritual masters and gurus talk about those who live the intellectual life, those who strive to pursue higher goods rather than, you know, the lower goods. They strive for higher goods. They can enjoy the lower goods for what they are, but like food and drink and conversations with, you know, people and the worldly things that the world offers, you can enjoy them, you know, for what they are without it being a distraction. But that's not what you pursue. That's not what you desire, because ultimately those things will not fulfill you, right? Because you, the things that you desire are infinite. So the more that we point our sword, ourselves towards heavenly realities.
You said our sword.
Yeah, I said point to a sword. The more that we can point ourselves towards heavenly realities, the lower goods lose their shininess. They lose.
Yeah. And I think especially the more we come to know those heavenly realities, right? That's why the intellectual life is important, because if you have not studied, if you haven't tried to get to know God, who he is, you know, why is he the way he is, you know, learn the things that we know and come to be familiar with that, then you'll fall in love with those things about him. And then especially those lower goods, you know, like they pale in comparison towards those divine realities that we can get a glimpse of. But even a glimpse of them here on this, in this life, is, you know, staggering in their awesomeness.
Right. Yeah. So he gives like some suggestions on how to subdue the instinct. You know, like when these instincts come up, when these passions arise, like here's some suggestions that he has to subdue them.
All right.
And some of them are very basic. You know, some that very easy to understand, but. We'll discuss them anyway. So, guard against the impressions that may arouse wicked suggestions.
I thought the first one was going to be don't.
Here's how you stop thinking about this. Don't do it.
Yeah. Here's how you don't commit sin. Don't.
Don't do it.
Just don't.
Yeah. You guard against impressions that may arouse wicked suggestions, which I think is so. The key here, I think, is that. Sin, especially grave sin, typically happens very slowly and it snowballs.
Yeah.
It goes from one thing to the next thing, which kind of leads to the next thing, which then all of a sudden you're in the throes of passion or you're in the throes of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And you maybe didn't set out to start this evil, you know, to do this evil, but it was kind of out of curiosity or, you know, it kind of tempted you a little bit. We've talked about that before, how when you're pursuing the
just kind of enjoy being tempted,
right?
Like I'm not gonna do it, but like just the temptation has like a little bit of like, you know, I don't know, it's tantalizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he says, you know, anything that may cause wicked suggestions. So not just wicked things, but things that could lead to that. To avoid. And then he says, energetically subdue those we cannot avoid. So if you can avoid the temptations or conflicts, avoid them. If you cannot, meet them head on with spiritual strength, discipline, and prayer so you do not get dominated by them.
I like that. Like meet them head on. Don't try. Yeah. If you can't run from it, then don't cower in front of it.
Right. And and you're not necessarily meeting it head on like at yourself, but it's through your discipline. So meaning that you've practiced this before and it's in prayer.
And
and
trust that the Lord will guard you in all ways that you need him.
Which is, you know, what our Father is, and you know, lead us not into temptation.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we won't get tempted.
Yeah.
So then guard against the gratification of idle curiosity, which is kind of leading back to what we said, the first bullet point, right? Like don't allow curiosity to control your life, which it seems in today's world, because of all the distractions that we have, that distractions is a breeding ground for curiosity, and we're allowed to be curious in certain instances that I think previous generations didn't have that temptation. Which is the importance of being able to guard your time wisely and understand what your role is in your family life, your business life, and set out to accomplish and do that the best you can, mm-hmm. to avoid this idleness, which is a breeding ground for curiosity, which can be a breeding ground for sin.
Yeah.
Deny ourselves this is kind of an interesting one. Deny ourselves in some things lawful.
It's good exercise. This is like, I know I've mentioned this before, but I have the habit or something. Whenever I drive by a wreck on the side of the road, I don't look.
Right.
Just because I want to, just like everybody else.
And then they slow down and cause.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's part of it. Like, I don't want to be part of the slowing down problem.
Right.
But also it's just like, first of all, it doesn't happen very often. So it's not like this is something.
Praise
that,
God.
Yeah. But you know, the fact that it doesn't happen very often makes you want to look even more.
Mm-hmm.
It's just good. Just a little good little exercise here and there.
Yeah. And then some couple easy ones is, you know, strengthen ourselves through reconciliation and through prayer, obey our spiritual director. And another one he says is never grow discouraged in the conflict. Okay, so the other day I was talking with one of my sons, and he was mentioning like not specific temptations, but like just the pressure of doing well, of being a good boy. You know, he's just like, you know, there's just a lot of pressure of. It's just hard to be a good boy. There are a lot of things that are happening. I go, I totally agree. I said, like, you know, but pressure is a good thing. And he kind of looked at me strange, like, what? And I said, pressure is a good thing. It means that you have the opportunity to do something great. That you have people that are counting on you to do great things. That you are a magnanimous man.
Mm-hmm.
That you're striving to do great. And you have to battle for that greatness.
Right. And that means that you feel the correct type of motivation. Right. Because if you weren't ordered towards the good as a boy in this situation, you wouldn't feel pressure to be good.
You know who people.
You wouldn't care about it.
Yeah. You know who don't have pressure? People who don't have pressure? Slothful people.
Right. But because you are ordered towards the good, you feel this pressure, which is a type of motivation, which is like a type of encouragement, you know, even a maybe a form of peer pressure that is pushing you towards the good. So it's a good thing.
Right. So I think that's a good mind frame to take. Like when things are maybe stressful or hectic, or you feel kind of some pressure, it's like, okay, embrace it. This is an opportunity for me to do something great. And, you know, let's battle to do that great, to be great.
Yeah.
And the last one he says is never imagine ourselves immune from the assaults of the flesh.
I think this is a huge one.
I do too. I mean, I've lived this one. Years ago, there was something that happened where we were talking with friends, and I was like, yeah, I mean, I totally understand. But I don't battle with that anymore. That's not something that I battle with. But, you know, I totally can see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I'm thinking like, yeah, that's just. I've totally conquered this.
I've moved on.
I have moved on. And then like that week, I fell into that temptation, you know, and mm-hmm. I was like, what? You know, what was this?
Pride.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
It always comes before the fall.
Right. And so, yeah, so it just never be immune, you know, be on guard at all times.
Right. Yeah. You know, even when you read some of the, like the accounts of Our Lady, where she came and talked to some of the mystics, where she, you know, through private revelation, but things that I think are really beautiful. She says things, Mary talks about how she was constantly worried about falling into sin.
Mary.
The like, Holy Mother of God.
This is something that Mary lived with, you know, not like an unhealthy fear.
Right.
But a constant awareness and a caution towards, you know, like this is what we would call watchfulness, mm-hmm. About, and if, you know, like a holy fear, well, maybe not holy fear, that's kind of a different thing, but a healthy fear of falling into sin. So you are capable of great sin. I am capable of great, we are all capable of great sin. And unless we stay vigilant and guard our senses, be watchful over our emotions, then we very likely will fall into a great sin, right?
Right, yeah. And so when you're at your best, you should prepare for your worst, right? You know, so when that temptation is not something that you feel like you're battling right now, then those are the times to fortify the walls. Those are the times to strengthen the walls and figure out, okay, what can I do to you know, make sure that that does not happen? And ultimately, the main thing is like continue to live in the state of grace. Keep your prayer life up.
Yeah.
The importance of having good friends who push you towards virtue.
As long as you are in the flesh, you might commit sins of the flesh.
That's right. So when we get back, we'll talk about the actual purification of the memory and what we must do to succeed and what we should do and the benefits of purifying the memory.
Sweet. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about restraining the instinct. The instinct. The one.
Which one?
The.
Yeah. That's how you named it.
Don't.
Here's how you avoid it. Don't.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the number one rule when dealing with the devil.
Don't.
Don't.
Yes. Or you could imitate Christ and just repeat scripture back to him.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah. I actually wouldn't do that, nor would I like recommend.
I just want to imitate Christ in all things.
Conversing with the devil at all. If the devil has something to say to you, you ignore him altogether. If you want to repeat some scripture to yourself, that's great.
But you keep that to yourself.
But do not, like, never under any circumstances should you direct something to Satan.
He's smarter than
because he wants you to, you know, now you've engaged with him. It's just, look, this is not going to end well.
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about, so to purify the memory, he talks about things that are dangerous to virtue or hinders us from elevating higher goods or useful things. He says we must avoid sinful occasions and associations. So I think that's really tough, especially if you have
friends. It's easier said than done, but yeah. Like, yeah, if you can really lock down on discipline, just look back, say, hey, this is
avoid sinful occasions and associations. A lot of that has to do with place.
Yeah, it does. A lot of it has to do with place, but also, a lot of it has to do with digital places.
Yes.
You know, in digital places, they follow you around. And I think the tricky part and the hard part about it, avoiding the near occasion of sin, is that it's often incredibly inconvenient to the point where it seems like in the moment, it's not that big of a deal.
Right.
Because it's going to be fine. And then it is. And then
until it's not.
Maybe the next time it is, right? But and then maybe 10 times it is. And then on the 11th or whatever, or the 52nd, it isn't.
Right. Yeah. And then he says, not to recall too vivid in manner the memory of past sins.
Mm.
And this is something that we can do easily when we see friends for the first time in a long time, maybe that friends that you weren't living a, you know, a very Christian lifestyle with, and the natural instinct or habit that you could get into is reliving the glory days, so to speak, or like remember when we used to do this and we'd do this till midnight, you know, or like whatever. And it's like you're just kind of reliving these memories that you had with the shared experiences that you had with them in life.
Yeah.
But then you're just recalling sins that you've committed in the past.
Right. Or and you know, and then glorifying I've even caught them. Myself at points like almost bragging about the sins I used to commit. And right. It's like I don't know why I'm talk I don't first of all I don't know why I'm bringing these up at all. Second of all, I have no idea why I'm speaking about them in this way, you know.
Right. As if the way you can do it, or you can fall into this temptation is like, I was so bad. I used to do this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
You know, and really what you're doing, you talk about custody of the senses, custody of the ears for the other person. Like you have a duty to those around you not to defile their imagination or to cause them to lead them to sin out of curiosity. Of things
and when you do that, it might be clear that you're saying these things were wrong, but you're still making them sound cool.
And you possibly are presenting something to them that they had never even considered.
Yeah, that's right.
The next one, which is interesting, is forgetting injuries that you've received.
Mine, that's easy for me because it was to the head, so.
At least that's what they told me.
I think that's what it was.
But forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Right, so to purify the memory is one way to do it is forget the injuries that you've received, the wrong that has been done to you, which I find interesting.
Hard to do.
Very hard to do. Cultivating detachment to earthly things and not dwelling too frequently or too fondly on the pleasant recollections of life.
That last one's interesting. Not recollecting too fondly on the pleasant recollections of life. That one is unexpected for me.
Well, again, these worldly pleasantries are fleeting and fading.
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
So he said, like, in order, like, here's the things that we should do. So those are things that, like, we shouldn't do, or, you know, how to avoid defiling the memory. The things that we should do to help purify the memory is cherish and benefit the creation, redemption, and sanctification of our life, which I find interesting that one of the things he says is to see beauty, to fill our imaginations and our memory with beauty in creation. And then he says, think about the wants of the church and the trials of the Holy Father, the Pope.
All right.
He says, like, to purify the memory, like, obviously, here's what the church wants you to do. And then, like, imagine the trials that our Pope is dealing with.
Okay.
And I would assume it's because, like, the burden and heaviness of his cross and temptations are much graver and bigger than what yours are.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's why.
He's concerned about the whole world.
Right. And then obviously, so this is a kind of an obvious one, is remember the sad condition of sinners, right? The poverty of the poor and the suffering of the sick. And then, to recall that our own humble, origin, our obligations and infidelities, the shortness of life, memento mori, the value of grace, the certainty of death and judgment and the suffering of the poor souls in purgatories, the terrors of hell, and the beauty and the beatific the beatitude of heaven.
So these things are all ordered towards really pondering humility in one form or another, and just kind of keeping your mind grounded in the present
and the reality of the future.
Yeah,
that we will have to atone and we will be judged someday.
Even that has a way of making the present
even more intense.
Bringing the present before you, because Well, I guess I should do something now about either good or bad, you know, good or stop doing something.
You know who would love to do that is the souls in purgatory.
Yeah, that's right.
Which,
I'm not laughing at them, but I'm saying, yes, you're right.
Right. So here's the benefits of purifying our memory. Here are the six benefits of purifying the memory, okay? Tranquility and peace of heart.
Yes, uh-huh.
The purity of your conscience,
mm-hmm.
which is so taxing if you don't have the purity of your conscience, right? Because then you're always thinking about other people and what they're thinking about you, or, you know, because you're not, your conscience isn't clean. And so you just assume, like, maybe subjectively or subconsciously, that's what I was trying to think of, that, oh, just because my conscience is clean, theirs isn't either. And then they're thinking about me in some
unfaithful
bad way.
People always assume other people are unfaithful.
Right. You cheated on me. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I actually cheated on you.
Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect example that someone's, cheats in a relationship. All of a sudden, they become the suspicious one.
Mm-hmm. Freedom of countless temptations.
Oh, that's a pretty good one.
That's a great one. You want to purify the memory? Here's the benefit of it. Freedom of countless temptations.
Yeah.
Then the special protection of divine providence.
Another good one.
Another great one. The inspiration of grace.
Yeah.
And the last one, the special guidance of the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny that, like, these things, they're like how to avoid, like what to avoid and what things that we should do. None of them were like modern psychology methods or whatever. I don't even know what modern psychology methods are, but, you know, these were just very basic things about living the moral life. You know, pondering, keeping your thoughts oriented towards divine realities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not complicated. It might be hard to do in the moment, right?
Yeah, and the throes of passion.
Right. Avoiding near occasions of sin is very hard. Because you don't want to do that, right?
But the more ordered your life is, you know, this is what, the more peaceful your life becomes, right? So the more, because peace is the tranquility of order, is, you know, what St. Thomas says. And so the more ordered your life becomes, the more that you have these things that you can kind of pack and like use as your blueprint to live a holy life, the more ordered you can become and the more peaceful you become.
So I want to talk to you on the other side, that we're into the show here, but more time on the podcast, about how restraining the instinct plays itself out specifically in marriage.
Okay. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus. Okay. So, Adam, I wanted to just bring this up because this is just in my own marriage, something that has been, oh, not a challenge. It's been a challenge. It's been challenging. You know, there are just periods in your married life where, you know, you're going through periods of abstinence,
mm-hmm.
right? For one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
And
NFP.
Yeah, I mean, you're practicing NFP. You know, for whatever. There's a lot of reasons, and you know. You will decide what those reasons are. I don't want to get into.
I want to get into yours specifically, Dave.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard. It's a real challenge, especially when you go from not abstaining
to abstaining.
To all of a sudden, you're abstaining. You know, like once you're like 2 months in, I mean, if you ever had to do that, I don't know. I don't even want to think about what that situation is, but you know, you can adjust, but sometimes when you're going back and forth
between snip, snap, you have no idea.
That does it's to whole. A guy. It can just be really hard. And I don't think that women in general have a good understanding of what that's like for a man.
Hmm.
Right? Because we are just, our sexual natures are just different. So I wanted to ask you, this is really my question for you.
Oh, no, great.
What is the balance for a husband between, like, how do you share this with your wife? Okay. On the one hand, you don't want to be appear weak about it, you know, like, oh, honey, I'm just so struggling. And, you know, you want to be a husband who has self-mastery. Okay. And this isn't something that, like, oh, we just are doing, this is something we need to, this, you know, as a couple, you've discerned we need to abstain. This is just a period of abstinence. So that's what we're doing. And you don't want to make it a bigger burden on her than it needs to be. So, you know, like, what's the balance between sharing with her what that struggle is that you're going through and just not sharing it with her? You know what I'm saying? Like, the look you're giving me is...
Well, I'm just waiting for that question. I'm waiting for
there,
the question.
That's it. Have I gone on long enough for you to get the question?
Well, you've definitely gone on a long time. I'm just trying to grasp what your question is. So during your absence,
yeah,
how much do you talk to your wife about the struggle have?
So if you're in this period of abstaining, and it can be hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been in this moment where it's like, I don't know exactly what to do. Like, what is the best course of action? On the one hand, there are two extremes that I worry about. Oversharing would be one of them. You know, like, all the time, just tell, like, I just want to be open lines of communication here, babe. This is still really hard. I'm still really struggling. You know, that's just, it's just weak behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yeah, it's hard. It's hard. You're right. But, you know, we want to be virtuous, chaste.
And we don't want to be stoics on the other side, right?
We want to be virtuous, like, chaste men. But on the other hand, we don't want to just, like, not share with her the fact that, like, maybe you are really struggling. And this is, like, you know, something that you need her to, like, come to bat with, like, even if it's just in prayer. You know, for you, how would you decide where that balance is between these two things?
Okay, that's an interesting question. So where I would go with this, or at least for me, and this is off the top of my head, but I would go back to where I was when we were engaged and say, listen, honey, I love you and I want you to go to heaven. And I want to go to heaven with you. And that is what our vocation is ordered towards. However, I'm still, like, there are things in which, like, I still have passion and, like, feelings towards you. And there are going to be times where I'm going to struggle with those things. And in those times, I need you to know I desire the higher goods. And I need you to be there for me in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are going to be times where maybe you're the other way and I'm going to be that way for you. And just try to reiterate, like, those are the things that I desire.
So
that's what I would probably try to do.
If it gets to the point where I'm springing this question on you. I've thought about it a little bit longer.
Yeah, I can tell, because the question that led up to it was even longer than my
aunt. So this was a situation that I encountered in my own life.
Yeah.
And what I decided that, because I was getting to the point where it was affecting what the way I was thinking about her, like I was actually, not like I was objectifying her.
Right, but you were like thinking like, you don't understand what I'm going through right now.
I was like almost resenting her.
Right.
Because
okay, I see what you're saying.
Because I knew that like she is not struggling the way I'm struggling.
Right.
And she doesn't even, she's not even asking how I'm doing. You know, like mm-hmm. there's all these dumb mind games. Mm-hmm. Things that I never do. And I don't like have those kind of thought processes mm-hmm. most of the time. But that's when I realized, okay, this is actually impacting the way like our relationship. She might not even know it, you know, but definitely once I got there, I said, you know what? I think I need to tell her this is really hard.
You know? And then go take a cold shower.
And that was it. You know, it wasn't anything like, so I need to, like, we need to change our decision about
right.
you know, abstaining. That wasn't it at all. But I was nervous to do that and have that conversation simply because I did not want to appear to be a weak man to her. You know, I want her to view me, her husband, as someone who's strong, who has... like who is in control of himself.
I see, yeah.
Right? Who I'm not subject to the whims of my body. I have mastered my body, right? Like that's the man I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly how I want her to view me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But so it was, I don't know, it was just something that was hard to discern where that line was, but that's what I decided. Like, look.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times where I've been like, look, listen, I am struggling. I just want to let you know, I'm mm-hmm. struggling.
Yeah.
And that way, and those are, like, if it wasn't, let's talk about something outside of the sexual nature.
Yeah,
right?
It could be other things.
If the roles were reversed and I didn't know or I wasn't really even considering the struggle that my wife was having on a certain aspect.
Which this is probably
which
the way it is most of
the time. I want her to tell me. So that I can be more sensitive to that matter.
Yeah.
And I can be offering that up in prayer for her.
Yeah.
Like those are the two things that I want to be able to do. I want to be there for her in times of struggle. And I want to be able to offer up prayer for her in times of her struggles.
Right.
You know, outside of, you know, of in any situation in life. So I think it's good to have, but then I think where what you're saying also is, that once you've said it, there's no reason to belabor the point afterwards. You've said it. You've told her.
Right.
You're struggling. You don't need to remind her that you're struggling. You don't need to remind her the next day or, you know, like whatever it is, like over and over again. Because mm-hmm. then you become complaining. Then it's complaining.
Correct. That's exactly right. Where it's not communication. You're not just communicating. It's actually just complaining.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a vice, you mm-hmm. know, like venting is bad. Venting is not good and it's not healthy, but she might now ask me, hey, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that would be different, you know, like, oh, well, a little better than yesterday, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Fair to middling.
Yeah. And just being able to talk about it can be a big help. But anyway, we were talking about restraining the instinct. And so
this is what you've been restraining. Well, this is what you've been wanting to talk about this whole time.
I remember like, we're having to restrain the instinct. So yeah, that was really sucked.
Yeah, yeah. So Adam, what did you do? Tell me what you did. And like, you've been waiting for that whole moment, this whole episode.
Not the whole time, but
I
did think like, hey, this would be good to talk about at the end.
Good.
So that's all I got.
Live holy lives.